and welcome to Mundo Albiceleste's podcast. And it's been a long time since the last time we got together with you to discuss all things Argentina. And as always, with me is John from Malaysia. Hello, John.
Yeah, hello, Seba. And it's been a long time since we had our podcast show going on. I mean, I'm sure all of us has been pretty busy. But you know what? I think it's the right time to make a comeback, you know? I mean, it's a weekend that promises full of action, and I'm sure many fans of Argentina are looking forward to this coming weekend.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I think it's difficult to find a better time in terms of action for all fans of Argentine sports. And we know all you want to do is talk about the national football team and how it's preparing to face Colombia on Saturday. But first, we probably have to touch on a couple of subjects. Isn't it true, John?
Yeah, of course. You know, there's a lot of things going on about Argentina at the moment here. And one comes to mind has to be Juan Martin Del Potro, who's made it to the, in his first time ever in his career, he made it to a semi-final stage in a tennis Grand Slam, which is a great achievement for him.
Yeah, I reminded to everyone, maybe some of you are listening to this after he played with Roger Federer. We are recording it one day before this all-important semi-final match between Del Potro and Federer. And of course, after what I read on the comments box in our blog, most of us have two favorites, and the two are meeting in these semifinals. It's Del Potro and Federer, and I think most of us wanted Federer to win this the only Grand Slam title he's missing. But now he's facing Del Potro, and of course, being from Argentina, we all want Del Potro to win. So it's kind of a tricky situation.
Yeah, it is a tricky situation. I mean, I was surprised to see that some of our readers or listeners were so eager to see Federer winning the French Open. And on top of that, you know, this year's French Open has been probably the most craziest I've ever seen in a long time. I mean, I never knew what to expect. I kind of thought that, okay, it's on clay. You know, Rafael Nadal being the number one player in the world, his favorite surface, he's going to cruise past everybody. And guess what? He's out of the tournament much earlier than anyone can expect. And, you know, it's been a huge roller coaster event here.
Yeah, and I was thinking about crazy, and crazy was when Gaston Gaudio won it in 2004, and he played Guillermo Coria, recently retired, in the final, and that was really crazy. But now let's turn the page and talk a little bit about one event that I had the opportunity to attend this week in Buenos Aires. It's not very often that you get a chance to talk to one of these the greatest ambassadors in Argentine sports. And it was my real pleasure to attend to a press conference on Wednesday in Buenos Aires. And we managed to get a short interview with none other than Luis Scola, who plays for Houston Rockets as well as the national basketball team. And I'm sure he doesn't need such a long introduction, but because everyone here knows him. But this is the first time we got to the chance to talk to one top athlete here at Mundo Albiceleste after we failed with Mario Kempes and Juan Pablo Sorín. And I apologize for that again, and I will do every time we speak about it. But now we had this opportunity, and I would like to share with all of you the short but nice interview that we have with Luis Scola. Let's have a listen.
Okay, Luis, thank you for having us, and it's a pleasure for us at Mundo Albiceleste to be able to talk to you, and you're such a great ambassador for Argentine sport all over the world. And I would like to ask you, what are you going to do next? And I know you're joining the Argentine national team for the World Cup qualifier, and what are your views on that tournament and your personal
schedule?
Yeah, your schedules and your expectations for that.
Well, first of all, I'm vacation right now. I'm gonna take a few days off, which I've been doing for a couple of weeks, and I'm gonna take a couple, not probably like a week and a half more, and then I'm gonna start preparing the FIBA Americas in this case for national team. In the middle, I probably will have to go to China for at least 1 week to do some commitments I have there, especially with my shoe company Anta that I'm doing a lot of stuff with, and I'm so happy with them. And then I'm gonna join the national team probably around late or mid 20s of July. We wanna be preparing the championship. We wanna be playing the championship, and then I'm gonna go to Houston and start all over again.
All right, and slightly off topic. Are you gonna watch the World Cup qualifiers for the national team, the football team?
Well, yeah,
it's Colombia.
I'm working on. Yeah, probably I wanna go to Colombia. Like one of my friends who actually happens to be here, tell me if you wanna go. So we probably wanna look for tickets to go there.
And do you follow the team?
Yeah, oh yeah, I follow the national team, and I follow like the main soccer events. I follow them, but as I say before in some other interviews, I'm kind of losing a little bit the passion for soccer. Sometimes I watch it, I'm a River Plate fan, and sometimes I watch the games and I watch, but it's not like before. Like before I used to watch everything, and now I just watch it sporadically sometimes.
And finally, what is your message for all the fans of Argentine sports and the national basketball team all over the world that follow Argentine sports, perhaps not in Spanish because they are not able to read the language, but in English and...
Well, I think everybody in the world should be following whoever sport they like, the national team of Argentina of it, because I think we got a pretty interesting way to feel the national jersey and the national colors. And we show it in the court, and we show pride, and we show respect for the game. In any sport, it's not just basketball. It's basketball, it's soccer, it's rugby, it's tennis. And I think that is a pretty unique quality we do have, because it's mixed with talented and with quality most of the time. So I think it's something that most of people really enjoy, and most of people really appreciate it. So I think if they have the chance, whatever sport is they like, they should take a moment and take a minute to look of the Argentina national team outfit.
Okay, thank you. And you're making us very proud and worldwide with all your achievements and in basketball in particular. So on behalf of Mundo Albiceleste, we thank you very much for this contact.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure for me to be there. Bro.
Well, after listening from Luis Scola, it's time to continue talking about what's going on these days. And one thing we need to mention is this Toulon tournament. I know it's not a big, it doesn't have a big deal of importance here in Argentina. Some clubs are saying, listen, we don't want to release our players. And I believe I understand these clubs. Some of them are playing against the relegation, some others are fighting for the title, and this tournament is not official. It's a good window of opportunity for a lot of players to show what they can do, and for a lot of scouts and clubs from all over the world to see their talent. But at the same time, it's not official, but it's always a great opportunity for us to watch an Argentina representative taking the field, and on their debut, Argentina won quite convincingly. Did you see the goals, John?
Yeah, I'm watching the goals on the YouTube video which you uploaded into our blog. And unfortunately, we don't really have a substantial coverage on this tournament. The one that I remember the most about this tournament was in 1995 when the Malaysian Olympic team actually participated in that tournament. I can't really remember what happened. But apart from that, I don't really have that great memory about this competition here. But like what you said, you know, it's a good platform for some of these young players, you know, to enhance their reputation. There's nothing more you can ask for by wearing the national team jersey and showing what you got. I think a lot of people will see more in that compared to what you do for your club.
Yeah, John, and speaking about the memories from the Toulon tournament, I remember the 98 tournament, and Argentina won that tournament, and it was managed by Jose Pekerman, and a certain Juan Román Riquelme was elected best player in the tournament. And speaking of Juan Román Riquelme in particular, I know there's a lot of fans of Riquelme out there, and I consider myself a huge admirer of his game. I'm not entirely his fan, but only because I don't share a lot of his controversial ways of seeing football and life in general. But recently, in an interview, I failed to mention this on our blog, but this is a great opportunity here on our podcast. Diego Maradona said on Monday, in an interview on television on Fox Sports, he said that Juan Román Riquelme is welcome back at the team whenever he wants. It's entirely up to the player to accept a conversation with Maradona and to accept a call-up for the national team. So I say, for all Riquelme fans out there, all hope is not lost. Maradona still believes in Riquelme. He said, if it was up to him, Riquelme will be in the list to face Colombia and Ecuador. He continues to say the same thing he did when the first controversy broke up between the two of them. So Riquelme has a window open if he wants to return to the national team. There's no comments from the players so far, but I wouldn't be surprised if they sit down and talk like they should, and if we see Riquelme back in our team.
Okay, yeah, but now I feel that maybe, you know, Diego and Riquelme could, you know, maybe the situation now is a bit more calmer and quite and cool down as compared to the heat when it all started. So I'm sure both of these guys will try to put their heads together and see how it's best to move on. And I think, in my opinion, you know, after watching the way Barcelona played throughout this season, you know, I think we have all learned just how important is it to have that your typical old-fashioned kind of playmaker, you know. And Riquelme fits that particular role very well. And if he comes back for the national team, in a positive manner, I think it's all good for Argentina.
Well, I agree, and let's, this gives us the opportunity to start discussing this game against Colombia that's coming up, and a crucial game, I might add. About the playmaker situation and the team in particular, well, Maradona has already said that he will play with the three little birds up front, and with them, Juan Sebastián Verón will play, and I remember the last few minutes against Venezuela, how Verón and Messi linked up very well, and they kept possession for most of the time. They placed those little passes that were driving the Venezuelan midfielders crazy, and I think that Maradona could be thinking of using Verón and maybe Gago something in a similar way Guardiola uses Xavi and Iniesta. I know they're different kind of players, and I know Xavi and Iniesta are probably the best two midfielders this season or in present time, and I don't think you can compare Gago or Verón either to the Barcelona midfielders. But I think tactically Maradona could be using Verón and Gago, not the two of them at all times, but maybe in different parts of the game, he could be using them in the same way Guardiola uses Xavi and Iniesta, linking up with Messi, giving Messi and the forwards Tevez and Agüero always some teammate to pass the ball to and to build up play and play little 1-2s, and at the same time those two can cover defensive positions and help Mascherano and Jonas Gutierrez when we don't have the ball. I guess we'll have to wait and see how it works, but I think people should forget about the past and what happened with Verón in 2002, I think Verón is probably playing in the best form of his career, and with his experience and his ability to strike the ball and to pass it around and to play those 40 yards long passes to the chest of his teammates or to the open space, and even taking free kicks or for those short little passes. I think Verón is a player that is really underrated by a lot of fans, and I think that's because what happened in 2002 that some people seem to be unable to forget.
I don't think it's just about what happened in 2002, because even till today, you know, when I speak to normal football fans, especially those fans of Man United and even Chelsea, they still puzzle why on earth am I talking so great about Verón, because I've seen Verón before his days in the English Premier League. I've seen him when he was in Parma. I've seen him how great he was when he was in Lazio. And in fact, in 2001, Verón was probably in the same league like Zidane or Figo, that category of players around that particular year. He was one of the best during that time. And Ferguson did not simply splash £28 million, you know, a British record signing fee on him just for nothing. I just feel that it was probably because coming to England and with his style of game didn't suit the physical, the ever demanding of the English Premier League. And he suffered a lot from that. And of course, there was the pressure being, you know, a record signing fee, you know, with playing for Man United, you know, with all the expectation that comes along with it. It affected him all the way to Japan. And it didn't help the whole national team cause, because he was a central figure in Marcelo Bielsa's tactic, you know. And to me, I think, you know, there's a saying that, you know, a leopard does not leave its spots wherever it goes. And I think Verón still has that thing, that what it takes to be our playmaker. It's just a matter of giving him the chance and the opportunity. And I think Diego is doing exactly the right thing, because if you remember against Venezuela, while the fans were still not forgiving on him, he stood by the line and told them to keep cheering on for him. And that's a good sign. That's what a player needs from his coach, you know.
Yeah, I agree 100% with that. And also, just to touch a little bit, it could be slightly off topic, but just to touch a little bit on that you mentioned, that some fans will think he was a failure at in the English Premier League, both at Man United or Chelsea. And I mean, the Premier League, it's an exciting league and very beautiful, and has a lot of passion and tradition and a lot of positive aspects about it. But it's not the center of the world. People think to think that the Premiership is the center of the world and that football is only what happens in the Premier League. And I'm completely against it. I mean, it's a dangerous thing. And I think England and the national team, they suffer from this concept, and for the failure of seeing that football is also played in the continent and is also played in South America and Asia and everywhere. And they think Man United and Liverpool and all the teams in the Premier League, or especially the Big Four, they think they are the center of the world. And if a player fails to make an impression there, they're not good enough. And I don't think that's true. And also, it happens the other way around. I mean, Eric Cantona, the French player that used to play for Man United and Leeds, he is regarded as one of the best players in the world, and I never seen him do anything great playing for France or playing in outside England. And I mean, and he is regarded as a legend, and I think he's not even 10% of a player that Juan Sebastián Verón is. I mean, I'm probably upsetting a lot of people who love Cantona and are listening to this, but this is something I needed to say, and it's finally off my chest. I mean, the fact that Verón didn't have a great campaign in the Premier League can be can be for a lot of reasons, but I don't think it's a factor that will help us say, well, he's not good enough or he's rubbish or whatever. He's a world class player in my opinion, and he had his fair share of controversy in Argentina with what happened in 2002. But I know he was playing through injury in that World Cup too, and now I think he has a chance to redemption, and I'm happy that Maradona is giving him the opportunity, because I know we can get a lot from a player like Verón and his experience and his way of seeing football. Okay, so let's move on and talk a little bit about another maestro that we have, and it's none other than Lionel Messi. I'm saying this with a smile on my face, and I can't help it. I mean, the first image that comes to my mind is Leo celebrating at the Camp Nou with probably a couple of glasses, one glass too much. But he was a happy boy, and he was enjoying probably the best time of his career. And recently in an interview, he admitted that he was probably drank a little bit more than he should have. But in the end, that's something that we should see as a teenager, having fun, having the best time of his life. And I'm confident his form in Barcelona will translate into success for our national team somewhere at some point in the future. There's no way that we will not achieve something in the future if we have Messi playing to the top of his ability. And I think that's probably the biggest challenge for Maradona right now, to have Lionel Messi play in Argentina the same way he plays for Barcelona or similar. It's a totally different setup. Messi plays every day with his Barcelona teammates. He lives with them, and he plays 38 matches only on La Liga for one season, and we're not counting Champions League or Copa del Rey matches. And basically, he's every day with his same teammates, and then he has to come to Buenos Aires, play one match every 3 or 4 months, and he's under that incredible pressure from the Argentina supporters, who want him to perform the same way he performs in the highlights we see from La Liga every Sunday, and that's virtually impossible. But he showed some flashes in our match against Venezuela last time around, and I think he's developing at a great pace for a player that age, playing in a national team and having such an important status on our team. So how do you see this situation with Messi, John?
Well, I have to be honest, yeah, I didn't see this coming at all. I mean, I would like to declare myself being the biggest Messi fan in the world, but I didn't actually see the way the season will end for Messi in such a manner. It was impossible for me to imagine this 12 months ago, because at that point of time, I think Barcelona was not in very good shape. They lost Ronaldinho, they lost Deco, and Guardiola came in, you know, as a coach without any experience. And we were all wondering, like, you know, what can he do? You know, I mean, is this Barcelona team good enough? And we also wondered if Messi was good enough to take over that number 10 jersey, which was previously held by Ronaldinho himself. And I kind of have to think that it all started probably somewhere around August last year, when we all argued day and night about why Barcelona is not letting Messi go to Beijing, you know, and we were so mad at them. And finally, in the end, you know, they gave it to him for him to realize his dream to play in the Olympics, and he came back with a gold medal. And I think, maybe in my opinion, Messi felt that he realized that he owes Barcelona so much, because they gave him the opportunity to represent us at the Olympics, and he achieved something that not many football players have achieved in their career. I mean, Olympic is in football is under 23, in a lifespan of a football career, you probably might play either once or twice. So I guess he felt that he needed to do something back for Barcelona, and I couldn't find any other way for him to do it by winning everything all at once, you know. And I think he's in the form of his life right now.
Sorry, just to touch on that, a lot of credit should go to Guardiola as well, because I know he played a huge part in that controversy between a national team, our Olympic national team, and Barcelona. And I know Guardiola was the one who said, "Okay, Leo, if you want to go to Beijing. I'll wait for you when you come back." And he released Messi, even though he had to play a very important qualifying match for the Champions League. And I think Guardiola in the end got the reward he deserved, because not a lot of managers will release a player like Messi to allow him to play in the Olympics. But I know Guardiola is an intelligent guy, and he said, okay, if Messi goes to the Olympics, he will be happy. There is every chance he will win the gold medal, and he will come back a happy young man. And I will have a happy footballer playing for me, and he'll be grateful because of the opportunity that I gave him to go to China and play for his national team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and another important note for us to remember on that night in Rome was that two of the coaches there had finally achieved the treble in their respective club. But one did it on his first attempt, the other took about nearly 13 years to do so. And that shows how highly I speak about Guardiola as a coach, you know, and he's a wonderful guy.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, John, so let's move on and talk a little bit about the tactics and the formation and the names we will probably be seeing taking the field for Argentina against Colombia on Saturday. The first thing is the formation. Maradona has been working this week with a backline of three men and three up front as well, with four in the midfield. It's a 3-4-3 formation, but I think it's quite flexible and it can adapt to different passage of the game. So I'm not sure if we will see a very rigid formation, and I'm sure we'll see a few players enjoying a free role like Messi and Verón. They will be playing all over the pitch. But the important thing is when it comes to the names and their normal positions, we will see three defenders and three forwards. And I know there's been a lot of discussion already taking place on Mundo Albiceleste, and I know not many people are happy with the backline of three defenders, but I think we should consider the context as well. I heard that Maradona got the inside information that Colombia will only be playing with one forward, who will be Radamel Falcao García, who plays for River Plate. There is also an opportunity and a chance for Colombia to play with two up front. That's not confirmed by the Colombian manager Lara. The possibility of Radamel Falcao García being joined by Hugo Rodallega, the forward who plays for Wigan Athletic, is also a chance that they could play together, the two of them. But if Colombia comes to Buenos Aires with only one forward, I say why not use three forwards yourself and keep three defenders to take care of that. Of that long forward that the opposition will bring. Sometimes I see a lot of teams wasting a lot of time with four defenders when they only have to cover for one player. And sometimes with three defenders you work best to cover for one forward. I don't know. It always depends on every particular case. But I don't think it's very wrong for Maradona to play with three defenders. It sends a message. It says, "Hey Colombia, we're gonna attack from the beginning. We're gonna be all over you, and you're gonna have to deal with it. And we are playing at home, and we need the 3 points." And I think it's a message Maradona is sending right away.
Well, I think Colombia has just sent their version, their message. I would say is that we are here to try to get a point from Buenos Aires. So I believe they're trying to go more on a defensive approach by putting one forward up front. So yes, I think, you know, when you really know your opponent and what sort of objective they have, it's best to find some way to go after them and attack them. And I think with a three back four and a three forward line clearly shows that Diego wants to go on the offense, you know, try to kill the game as early as possible, get the 3 points, because it is important for the team to get a good win at home. We're not saying that the match, the trip to Ecuador is not that important, yes, but for now, this match against Colombia at home, we should go after them and try to get the 3 points. A win is important here.
Yeah, also, I'm by looking at the standings in the South American region, we see that Colombia, alongside Peru, are the two teams that have scored less goals in these 12 matches. Colombia have only scored 6 goals in 12 matches, and two of them came against Argentina in that first leg that we lost 2-1 after going ahead on a brilliant strike by Messi. But then we saw Carlos Tevez getting a red card, the first of his 2 red cards in this campaign, and it all went horribly wrong after that. And Colombia scored twice, but they scored 2 goals there, and then they only scored 4 goals in the other 11 matches. So why would you play with 4 defenders at home against a team with such a terrible record? Yeah, they have the players and they can improve, and there are no guarantees that we are going to win this one. But I think you'll be wrong if Argentina play with 4 defenders, then 2 defensive midfielders. I don't think they will have enough work to do. And I mean, by playing the 3 little guys up front, yeah, some people are saying, well, what if we play Germany, and what if we play England, and what if we play Brazil? Well, here's a message to all those people. We are not playing Germany or Brazil or England. We are playing Colombia at home in Buenos Aires, and we need the 3 points. So I'm on paper, I'm in agreement with Maradona in this case. Not so much when it comes to the names, and I think this is unanimous. I mean, I don't want to see Heinze playing for us anymore, but as I said in one of the comments, he must have something and that he brings up to the table that we are clearly not seeing. But it's not Maradona is not the first manager who's calling Heinze consistently, and he's been playing under Bielsa, under Pekerman, under Basile, and Maradona. So 4 national team managers, they all considering Heinze. Maybe he has a positive influence in the dressing room. Some of the things that are the intangibles that we outsiders we don't see, and these managers are considering he's an important figure, but he's getting the starts every game, and that's something that really concerns me in particular. So that's probably the one and only name that I don't agree with Maradona from the possible starting 11. He'll play alongside Cata Diaz and Martin de Michelis, who can both play extremely well in a back line of 3 men. They can adapt to different situations, and they're good in the air, good in with their timing ability and their clearances, and also they have this immense help from Mascherano in the middle of the park, and he can drop back and help them whenever they need. And then we'll see Gago playing alongside Mascherano most likely, and Jonas Gutierrez and Verón also playing in midfield, and the 3 little birds up front. And also, special mention to Mariano Andújar. He's been really quiet, but he's been consistently delivering and playing at a high level for Estudiantes. They're now on their way. They're playing in the Copa Libertadores. They're the only Argentine teams who survive in this Copa Libertadores so far. And Andújar is one of those guys that will that will do the spectacular save when it's required, but he will also be very reliable, and he's not famous for making silly mistakes. He's very sober, very professional, and I think it's a great decision for Maradona to give Andújar the opportunity to play for Argentina.
Yeah, I think I would say Diego's made the right choice here. I'm not too confident at the moment with Carrizo, because he kind of got lost himself in Lazio and he made a brief return, but I don't think that he's up to the standard of what we want from our national team first choice keeper. And one of the names that I'm puzzled that is not in this list is Sergio Romero. And I feel that, you know, I'm not so sure why he was overlooked. He had a great season in Holland, winning the Dutch League title, not with AX, not with PSV, but with some other club, which is called AZ. And I'm wondering how come he was overlooked on this list.
Well, he made a silly mistake after Alkmaar got defeated in a cup game in Holland. He got back to the dressing room and he literally punched a wall, and he broke one of his fingers, and that kept him sidelined for a number of weeks. And it was a silly mistake for a young man to do, and you can understand someone being angry about getting eliminated, getting knocked out of a competition. But you don't take it that way. You don't punch a wall. I mean, you don't risk your tools. I mean, he works with his hands, and he could have kicked something. He could have do anything else but punch a wall. I mean, and maybe Maradona wasn't very happy with that, and he's probably making him pay for that. I'm not sure of this. Perhaps he had nothing to do in this decision, but I kind of think so, because before that incident, Maradona was also was always calling up Sergio Romero, but now he's looking at in another direction.
Okay, so let's talk about the back three. What would be your preferred lineup for that particular position, Seba?
I'm not happy with Heinze in particular, and I'm thinking about the different options, and I'm thinking that maybe it could be early to give him the start, but I think Nicolas Otamendi is such a great prospect and such a great player. He's clearly improving every day, whereas Heinze is playing worse and worse every day. And I think Otamendi has the ability to adapt to playing with four at the back or just two, and he can play in the center or he can play slightly to the right, to the right or to the left. He can do anything, and I will think that Diego isn't starting Otamendi right now because he wants to take him slowly and he doesn't want to expose him too much. It could be dangerous if he exposed Otamendi too much, being Otamendi being such a young player, but I will definitely go with him instead of Heinze. There's anyone could play instead of Heinze. I will put I don't know Bergesio playing in as a defender instead of Heinze. I mean, that's how I feel about the guy. But anyway, okay. And before we go, we've seen that there was a lot of discussion about a couple of or a few very heavy names being ignored by Maradona in this and the previous call-ups, and those are none other than Esteban Cambiaso, Mauro Zárate, and Gonzalo Higuaín. And I think the three of them have impressive cases for them to be in the national team setup. And I think the only reason why they're not is because Maradona has decided not to call them. I mean, there is no other reason. Nobody can say anything about the form these guys are showing, about their resilience, about the level of performances they're putting up every week in two of the European leagues, the most important European leagues, and I was surprised that they didn't get a call so far. And right now I'm worried about these guys not getting an opportunity at all in the future. But I also think it could be a case that Maradona will eventually come to his senses and see that even if they're not there to claim a starting role in the team, they can provide the goods whenever they're called upon, and I think there could be valuable substitutes if Maradona considers them as substitutes.
Well, I guess that's one of the few beautiful things about Argentina national team is because we are a national team that is, you know, I would say Argentina in football in general, you know, you could probably say that we can talk about about 30 to 40 or maybe even 50 top players. I mean, there are some national teams, they only have like 9 or 8 top players where you can expect all of them to start, all of them to get a call. But when it comes to Argentina, it's impossible because there's so many names out there. And it's hard to find a group of 24 players that will make everybody happy. And right now, as we speak, it's like 12 months away from the World Cup. And I'm pretty sure when Diego gives his final 24 of who is going to go to South Africa, one of us is not going to be happy about it. And history speaks for itself. As in 2006, I was overwhelmingly disappointed when Zanetti was not there, or Walter Samuel was not even in the team. In 2002, I was pretty surprised when Saviola or even Riquelme was not in the team. And even in 98 also, for some reason, I just couldn't understand why was Fernando Redondo being not included in the team. And if I was alive in 1978, I would have, jumped out of my couch with outrage and kicked the TV just to find out that Diego was not called up for the World Cup. And these things happen. You know, it's impossible to think about a 24 players where everybody is there. But yes, form speaks for itself. And Gonzalo Higuain, I don't think he has any other reason to say, to say why he was not called up by the national team. Because he has done more than enough to justify himself that he deserves a place in Diego's team. We don't know what's happening in the dressing room. I mean, a lot of these reports could be coming out here and there. But, you know, at the end of the day, these media, you know, they want to sell the newspaper or want to get more viewers on their TVs. We don't know how far all this is true or not. But at the moment, well, good thing is that Higuain is not called up by France, and he hasn't decided that he will quit for Argentina or play for France. Let's just keep fingers crossed, because you never know what Diego might have in mind. I mean, if Christian Jimenez has all the chance to make it to the team, I'm sure Higuain will.
Yeah, well, and also I think another important thing is that we are having a double fixture right now, and one of them is going to be at Ecuador in the altitude. And I kind of think that Maradona had that in mind when he made this list, and he included players such as Jimenez, who has an experience playing at an altitude, and players like forwards like Bergesio, who is having a great season in Argentina and had a great game against Panama when Diego played with this domestic national team, and I think there are a few names in this list that could be included just because we have this match in Ecuador, that maybe we need to go there with a different mentality and with a different approach. And perhaps the result against Colombia will influence the starting lineup that we will have, that we will see at Ecuador. I'm thinking if we win against Colombia, then Diego could use a lot of these players that played against Colombia on Saturday and keep them to play against Ecuador and try and get another win and play beautifully. But maybe if we get a draw or if we don't win so convincingly, he can use these kind of combative players and players that are not basing his game entirely on flair, but mostly on character and determination and stuff that we need when we are under attack, things that we really lacked in Bolivia. So I think that's all for today's show, John, and I think it's time to wrap it up and thank all our listeners for being always with us. And here's hoping for Mundo Celeste will be able to bring you more editions of this podcast that we are starting to make as a regular feature at Mundo Celeste.
Yeah, I would like to say the thanks to all our readers and for, you know, making Mundo Albiceleste alive throughout all these times. And it's been a long time. You know, we feel very sorry to keep you guys await for our next podcast. You know, and we will try to do more in the future. But till then, you know, enjoy the game. And a special note to Roy, who is not with us today. He's currently on a family vacation. We hope he has a good time and enjoy himself. And goodbye for now.
Bye-bye.